Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bexter, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello, how are you? I am recording this from my kitchen and I'm going to make myself a cup of tea while I talk to you about my first podcast episode. What strange times we are living in. I started recording the podcast just before lockdown. I think it was maybe a fortnight before. And it's funny to think back to that time now because we sort of knew that things were probably not going to stay as they were. But I remember when I went round to chat to Fern Cotton, who is the first person in the podcast series. And I remember when I went round to her house and we had this funny thing of, do we shake hands? Do we hug? And we actually still hugged because at that point there wasn't big signs saying don't hug everybody. It was kind of peripheral vision. And then things went very fast, didn't they? From being, you know, normal life to lockdown life. So now here I stand in my kitchen. And truth be told, as is befittingly sort of ironic for someone who's recording a podcast about how you make your work life and your home life mix, I've really struggled to get very much work done at all. I think I went into a sort of paralysis of not really finding I could be very creative or motivated. And anyway, I wanted to get on and release the podcast because even though currently everybody's work life, home life has gone all topsy-turvy, we will get back to normal one day. And anyway, it's still fascinating to me how people are making things work. And actually, I caught up with Fern at this time just to see how she's getting on and if she's managing to get work done. And of course, impressively enough, she is, which has actually motivated me to get on with what I'm doing too. The kettle has boiled. So, yes, I wanted to speak to Fern. You all know Fern Cotton. She is a broadcaster, but also innovator. She has her amazing Happy Place podcast that she's been doing for some time. I think it's maybe reached 70 episodes. She has started running a festival called the Happy Place Festival. She is a yoga enthusiast and incredibly fit. She's very creative. She does her drawings and has put them into books all about how to keep calm and happy and manage your mental health, as well as still broadcasting. So there was a lot to talk about with her. She's raising her, she has 2 of her own children, 2 stepchildren. If you are listening to this podcast and you have your own small people in earshot, there are a couple of rude words, nothing too scary. I think there might be 1 F word and the word for boobs that starts with a T, that's a bit ruder. if you have small people, maybe just keep the volume down a little bit. But I love talking to her. She's always been incredibly candid and honest about how she finds her sort of sleep deprivation with small people alongside all her work. So that's kind of where we started. And when we have finished the podcast chat, I will show you the bit where she's talking about how she's getting on now and how she's finding her lockdown living. Anyway, my kettle is boiled. My tea is brewing. So maybe pour yourself a cup. And this is my conversation with Fern Cotton. Thank you so much for listening. Well, I should probably start by saying, as befits someone who wanted to talk about being a working mother, I had a really bad night's sleep with my one-year-old last night. So I don't know if you have this when you... I suppose you're sort of out of the stage of having kids that wake in the
night. No, I'm not.
You're not?
No.
Oh, my goodness. I thought
it's
maybe...
killing me.
Oh, no.
I don't know what's going on. I guess you have these kind of phases that they go through.
Yeah.
And Honey was a bad... Honey's four, Rex is seven. Honey was a bad sleeper for most of last year. And then naturally, I think she's had a growth spurt and she is just a sleeping machine. She'll lie in, mm-hmm. She's really snoozy and dozy. Rex was an amazing sleeper.
Mm.
And then, I'm just going to tell the true story, even if it annoys my mum. He went to my mum's. She showed him an alien video on YouTube because she's obsessed with aliens. She's absolutely UFO freak.
Okay.
And it scared the hell out of him. And now, well, we went through a really bad phase at Christmas. He was waking up every hour, freaking out.
Oh, no.
And since we've done we've gone back to sleep training like it's a newborn baby. I mean, he's 7 years old. He's this huge, tall, lanky guy. And we're doing newborn sleep training. But we've now got it down to one wake a night or no wakes a night. So we're okay. Coming out of it. But we've had 3 months of hell.
Oh God, I'm so sorry. And I really relate.
Don't be sorry to me. You've got five kids. I mean, you don't ever need to apologise to me. It's just the sleep thing is crazy.
It is. So when I woke up in the middle of the night, I was, all you do is think about all the things you've got to do the next day and how much harder they're going to be and how much less successful they're going to be. And, you know, Mickey's one, so he is going to wake sometimes. And actually, he was a terrible sleeper for the first year. And I finally got him sleeping quite well, but I think he just likes to chuck in these nights just to keep me on my toes. Every once in a while, I'll have a 5:30 wake up or and that'd be the day begun. Or last week, we had one where he just was crying in the night and the only way he could sleep was by me sitting up in a chair.
Oh, no. Room.
And that was between 3:30 and 6 a.m. when
not appropriate.
No, it's not. And you want to wear a little placard for the rest of the day saying, just please be a bit gentle with me.
Just don't come near me. Stay away.
And I might cry.
Yeah, it's awful.
Well, that's really equally reassuring. And also, I'm sorry that your seven-year-old is... actually, my seven-year-old comes into my bed every night at the moment. Mm. So this is happening in our house too. And so what have you got going on in your work? What are you trying to get done with your work at the moment?
Oh, my God. I am in the middle of writing a new book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the stage... I kind of broke through the stage last week where I hated every word that I had written to now where I am accepting of what the book is and I'm just rejigging bits of it. So I'm, just tinkering around before I send off that first draft to then go through the very arduous process of editing it and just distilling it down to, what it is. But I'm happy with it. It's kind of coming along. So that's the big thing for now.
Are we allowed to say what the book is?
I can give you some sort of loose themes for sure. So it's all about integrity, honesty, authenticity, and living your life around those themes.
Wow.
So it's really
that's
nice.
A very important thing.
Yeah. And it's cool to riff around. It's a really nice subject to think about and look at my own life and when I have and massively haven't done that and the repercussions. So it's been really lovely. So that's lovely. And then there's so many other little bits going on. So tomorrow I start this new 90s show for BBC Sounds. So just playing all brilliant 90s music and talking about 90s TV and popular culture and just funny references from the 90s. So I'm really excited to start that. So that'll be every week on a Saturday that goes live and you can just listen to it whenever. Obviously the podcast is kind of ongoing. So I just record them whenever a person is around that is on our list. So we probably have one a week, maybe two a week sometimes, and we just bank them. And we've got our festivals that we're planning for this summer, the Happy Place Festivals. So that we're in the thick of that at the moment. And there's just some other little sort of happy place project. It's like a charity initiative we're working on called The Great Create for the Prince's Trust. It's all about getting people to be creative and arty, and then that in turn raises money for art therapy for vulnerable people. So we've got lots of really nice happy place stuff going on, and then a few bits just me doing my thing as well.
That's quite a lot of stuff
at
the moment.
That's
a
nice
thing, but
it's
a lot.
But I'm a bit of a nerd, really. Like, I never think, oh my God, I've got so... I mean, sometimes I feel tired and like I'm stretched with family life and work, but because I love what I do, I'm happy to put the kids to bed and then sit in the kitchen and research a podcast all night, or read a book because a guest's coming on, or look into what's going on with the festival. Like, that doesn't feel laborious. I want to get stuck into it, and I would way rather do that than watch TV or definitely go out. My God, I can't stand going out. So it's kind of, I can fit things in my free time. I just don't really do some of the normal stuff like socialise as much or slob out, because I'm so lucky to love what I do.
Yeah, and actually I think that really resonates with me, because I think getting things done like that and being busy, like, I adore it as well. And I think if you love all the things you're getting up to, it makes it so much easier to find the energy and find the time. Because it's, as you say, it's not laborious. It's actually, I actually think work for me has helped me find a lot of ways of dealing with, I would actually be a rubbish full-time mum. I think I'd be really awful at it. So, and I like having other projects. And sometimes I feel like it's a bit of a loophole, because you end up getting space for yourself in amongst the work as
well. Oh, absolutely. Like, I know that that's happening. I always feel like, oh my God, am I, you know, I think I've got a nice balance where I'm at home quite a lot with some of this work that I do, but, and also just in mum mode. But when I am working, I do feel like, oh my God, I'm getting a little break. I'm getting a little holiday from all the craziness in this house. I'm doing something I really love. And I'm also, like you said, getting stuff done, and we're moving forward with projects. So it does feel sometimes, not all the time, like very win-win, like I'm getting that time to myself and I'm doing something productive. But of course, there are times where you just feel stretched and knackered and like you're doing everything badly.
Yeah, and so working from home, what is that like? How does that really play out when you've got a four-year-old and a seven-year-old?
Well, better now. I mean, now they're older. Rex is at school every day. Honey is at nursery sort of part-time, but she does two full days. So if I'm writing, I'll really optimise those two full days. And the good thing as well, being a bit of a nerd, is I will focus. I'm not going to procrastinate and start like online shopping or going for a walk. Like, if I know I've got from 9 till 3:30, I will literally work without a break. Like, I'll eat while I'm working. I'm probably sure this is like not recommended at all, but I will be eating and typing, and I just don't stop, because I know it's made me much more focused being a mum. Because before, I could just, you know, dick about and go, oh, I'll just go and have lunch with a friend, do a bit, and then do some more tomorrow. But I don't have that luxury. So when I've got those 2 days or those moments where the kids are at school or nursery, I am in the zone. And I just, even if it's rubbish what I'm producing, if I'm writing or if I'm painting or working on a project, I'll just keep doing it anyway and then patch over the gaps the next day. But I am pretty good at being focused in those times.
And you, when you're with the kids, do you still try and do the work thing as well sometimes, or is it very much when they're home you stop all that?
Yeah, I really try and then just make that separation. And I love cooking, so I always cook for them, and, you know, I'll make little things to take after school, snacks or whatever, so we might do that together. Or we do a lot of art and drawing, and I tend to do a lot of stuff with them where I couldn't do both. Sometimes, say they're in the bath and I'm hearing emails ping, I'll go and quickly check them, but I'm not going to be sat there on my laptop whilst they're playing. I do like to kind of have that time where I'm with them and I'm, you know, cooking for them. Or it's just too hectic to do anything else. And they fight the whole time, like they're constantly arguing, so I have to just be a referee most of the time and try and create some peace, because it's just mental. So, and if we've got all four kids, because my stepkids come a lot, then there's no chance. You know, I've got two different sets of meals to do. I mean, my husband's around a lot as well, but we'll try and work out who does what. A lot of, as you'll know, taxiing from place to place. And so, yeah, that's why those hours when they're not here are so important. I just knuckle down and crack on with it.
And what was happening in your work when you had your first baby?
So when I had Rex, I was at Radio 1 full time at that point. So I was doing 5 days a week on the morning music show. And I was doing Celebrity Juice and a couple of other projects at the time, a couple of other TV things. So when I had Rex, I think like most with their first baby, you're quite terrified as to, you know, what's about to happen and if you're going to be able to cope with it. So I actually did take 6 months maternity leave. I didn't work at all. I'm self-employed. It's not like I got paid for not working, but they were like, if you want to take 6 months, fine, we'll get someone to sub you. So I literally took 6 months off, didn't earn a penny and did nothing. I didn't even think about work. I didn't feel I had the capacity to, quite frankly. I was so all consumed with just being a mum and surviving like most new parents are and not sleeping. And then I went back after 6 months and just tried to muddle through the chaos of juggling everything. And I found it highly stressful, definitely for the first year.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, I might be wrong, but an environment like Radio 1, which is so much about youth and, you know, most people listening are sort of probably late teens, early 20s, and they don't really want to hear that your brain's not working very well because your baby was up in the night, maybe.
I don't want to hear that. Absolutely not. And, you know, you have got a lot of other DJs there who will have been to gigs the night before, will have been out doing something fun. And I was just sort of watching a lot of, you know, CBeebies and like waking up in the night and watching online shows while I was breastfeeding and feeling deranged. So, yeah, I think that's probably where I started to feel like I needed to move on. I stayed a couple more years after that because I left when I got pregnant with Honey. But yeah, it did definitely, you know, create a big shift in how my life felt versus a lot of the listeners and other DJs there. So it all kind of naturally unfurled that I was starting to think about what do I do next?
Yeah. But do you remember feeling quite worried initially when you went back to work about being work, or were you always going to be a working
parent?
Oh no,
I was really nervous about it. I remember the first day back, I had the most ridiculous first day back, which is why I'll never forget it. It was my birthday. I had a normal radio show in the morning, and then in the evening I had to go back and record this big Justin Timberlake live concert. Bear in mind, I hadn't spoken to like many other humans and certainly hadn't on live radio. I was like, what is going on? I was so fuzzy in the head. I was talking to Justin Timberlake just thinking, I don't know what I'm doing. I haven't done this for so long. I haven't got a clue if this is awful. I'm just waffling on. And then Jesse kept texting me like, Rex won't calm down, he's freaking out, because I'd been breastfeeding and I was sort of at that point doing a bit of both bottle and breast. So he was just like, oh my God, I can't get him to calm down. I'm like, I'm just about to go on live radio. I don't know what to do. It was just so intense. And from that point on, I was just like, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
Luckily at the time, my amazing cousin Katie, who was a nursery teacher, came and worked for us as a family and helped us out, because obviously Jesse's in a band, like we have a similar setup. So he was off doing his thing. So my cousin was integral at that point. She was just such a backbone to the whole family and making it work and helping us through it. So between me, Jesse and Katie, we sort of fumbled through it, but my God, it was absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, and also when you get in and take over from Katie, it's quite hard for her to probably imagine how you felt. Like, I've just been interviewing someone live on radio and I couldn't really, I mean, it's not the same as for a lot of people who come in and go, oh, I was in a meeting and it all went, I mean, it's like, it's such a, I can sort of feel the stress of that from here.
Really. You've got to like wind down, and you know, I do so little of that sort of thing. I don't do those like big concerts or big live things so much anymore, because I've tried to tailor, you know, make my work fit around my life.
Yeah.
And it is much quieter now, and it is sort of less high octane. It was so it was all about adrenaline and being in the moment and thinking on my feet and being in a sort of heightened state. And then I'd come back to the family home and have to kind of unravel and get back to just having my feet on the ground and, oh my God, okay, what is going on in this house? You know, I need to get back in that zone. So that was always quite a speedy and weird transition. At the time, I was living quite near the studio as well, so I'd be home within like 15 minutes.
Right.
So there is no time to go, oh, I'm just going to like take a minute or whatever. It was just, I'm back into it. So yeah, it was full on. It really was. And I mean, it still is in a lot of ways, but I think you sort of incrementally learn to cope a teeny bit better.
And if you know, what your pre-baby you, what do you think she would think about you now and how your life is and all those changes that have happened?
It's a really complicated one, because I've been thinking about it recently, and I think my initial thought would be to presume that the younger me would think, oh my God, you know, you don't do, you, what do you do these days apart from work and parent? You don't do anything for yourself. You're quite boring. I'd probably berate myself a little. But then actually I unpicked that the other day when I was writing this book and I thought, actually, I do think I would think that because inherently I am a homebody and I am a bit of a nerd and I like being at home, I like being in with family and I like pottering around. I love those days where I'm not at work and I can just pop to the shops, do some chores at home. Like, I love those days. And I think actually in my 20s, even though I was like going out loads, doing all these, going to gigs and hosting these big concerts or doing these big live TV things, a lot of that was really uncomfortable and didn't feel natural. So I think actually all I've done is migrate back to being how I used to be as a kid and a teenager.
Yeah.
Because this is how I was brought up in a very normal working class environment where you didn't go to big concerts or do anything remotely exciting. You just had that lovely family normalcy.
Mm.
So I think actually I've just gone back to how I was before. And the 20s bit was just this decade of like chaos.
Mm.
And now I've just, you know, kids have forced me to get back into that mindset. Yeah. So I probably would be quite relieved, I think, looking at it weirdly.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, actually, were you raised in quite a traditional household? Did your mum and dad both work?
Oh, no, both parents worked because, you know, they literally had to. So my dad has only just retired, actually. He was a sign writer for years from the age of sort of 15 to his early 60s. And so he was out all day sign writing, painting, making signs, whatever. And then my mum, through necessity, was doing like three to four jobs at any one time. She was an orthodontist nurse, she was a cleaner, she was delivering Next parcels in the car. She was just trying to make it work around us going to school and after school clubs. And I mean, I think kids then had more freedom than our kids probably do today. So I would often just walk home, let myself in, make myself a snack, watch TV, and no one would be there. And that was perfectly normal back then.
Mm.
But she was just, I don't know how they did it. They somehow just, you know, there's me and my brother, there's two of us, but somehow they made it all work. And I got to go to my dance club after school and drama and all the things I wanted to do. And they facilitated that by working really bloody hard. So I do often look back and think, actually, I've got it really easy, to be honest. Compared to what they had to put up with, it's, you know, it's just a lot simpler for me.
Yeah, and it sounds like they instilled a really good work ethic, because I do think that's
hugely
a nice thing about seeing your parents do those things, is it becomes familiar to you that it's okay to give yourself permission to wear those different hats and do those different things.
Hugely. I think, you know, there's pros and cons, like we all know, to being a working mum or not. You know, there's no right or wrong. There never is. It's just what feels
absolutely
right to you. But certainly, I think by osmosis, how your parents are, you know, massively sort of leaks into you and your thinking and the way that you want to run your life. And, you know, my parents have both been incredibly hardworking. So it would feel very unnatural for me to not. And actually now, Jesse's really good at saying to me, look, just slow down, just like give yourself an hour or a break. And he has to almost tell me, because I'm so used to that model of family life and seeing that and knowing that I can, so why not, that I have to be told to just put the brakes on a bit.
I'm exactly the same, because I've always got this voice in my head of someone going, there's someone out there with more children, more to do, and they're getting it all done. So I find
in your case, there's not many with more children, but there's not that many.
But it's funny because I've sort of got equal parts sort of modern woman. And again, I have a, you know, brilliant role model in my mum of having a good work ethic and raising us. But I've also got a sort of mum's net forum in there as well, where it's kind of going, well, that's lovely if you want to work. I mean, I personally, I couldn't leave my kids with someone else. But it's really wonderful that you do. It's sort of like this sort of insecurity about it, I suppose, sometimes.
Oh, I have that for sure. Definitely. I think all working mums do. I think if you're a stay-at-home mum, you feel guilty that you're not working, and if you're a working mum, you feel guilty that you're, you know, sacrificing moments with your kids.
Yeah.
You just can't win. And I talked to Jesse about it a lot, because he doesn't feel like that. He really doesn't. And he goes to work and he does just sort of switch off. I'm not saying that in a judgmental way. He just has the ability to go, no, I want to go to work and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I do think there is still that sort of archaic notion that the woman's place is still in the house.
Definitely.
That is still there. You know, it does still sort of resonate. And so our generation, and possibly our mums too, but our generation certainly having to navigate parenting, females navigating parenting, looking at we've got a lot more options. So what do we choose to do?
Exactly.
And how do we do it? And it's really confusing.
Yeah, and quite overwhelming, I think.
Massively.
And I totally agree. I mean, Richard as well, he's a brilliant dad and he's, you know, very involved in everything. However, he seems to find it a lot easier to compartmentalise.
Yeah.
And wherever I am in the world and whatever I'm doing, I've always sort of got streams in my head of what's happening with all the kids and looking at, okay, that one will be there by now. And it's, you know, Jesse who's 4, like he'll be having lunch at nursery now. And, oh, I hope Sunny gets home all right after school and all this. But Richard will ask me like 4 or 5 times about something that's happening. And I'll be like, I've told you where that's happening today. And I just sometimes think, but I think I've almost created the beast a little bit too.
Oh, I have. We had this chat last night. We were talking about some logistical bollocks that we spend our whole life sort of doing these, who's doing what, where and when.
Yeah.
And I was moaning about Jesse, who again, like Richard, is the most brilliant dad, massively hands-on, will go take Honey to ballet, do it. Like, he just would get stuck in with whatever's there.
Mm.
But because I am such a control freak and I'm quite untrusting, I will often do everything so there can be no room for error.
It's exactly the same as me.
And then he's like, well, you didn't give me any time to do anything because you've bloody done it all. And I'm like, yes, because it wouldn't have gotten done. And it's like, well, I don't actually know that because I didn't give him the chance.
Yeah.
So it is like we do create that. We make a rod for our own back and then we moan about it. But
so
I'm a control freak.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. And I think actually it suits me to take the reins in that way.
And
I mean, yesterday I was doing something. I was like, oh, can you just feed Mickey? And then I kind of came up. I literally said to it, do you want me to open the packets for you? Because we're doing the puree thing. And I'm like, what am I doing? You know, like he doesn't probably need that. But then I did it anyway.
I know.
And he was like, do you want to just feed him? And I'm like, no, I do have to go and do this other thing.
It's like, ridiculous.
What am I doing?
What are we doing? It's so funny because Jesse and I talk about you two all the time. We constantly go, how the fuck are they doing this? Like, how are they doing this? Because we have really similar jobs. You know, you and I have, there's similarities, and certainly with Jesse and Rich, that we've got a similar setup of there is no structure, there's no schedule.
Yeah.
We've got 2/4 kids at any one time. You've got 5 kids all the time. And we're just like in awe of you guys. Like, how are they doing this? Like, we just, honestly, we talk about you guys all the time.
Well, that's funny, because I think I have, I think there's a reverse thing happening in our house, because I know you've always been very sweet about how much I get done, but in my head, I'm always a bit like, I bet Fern, you know, you just seem to have so many things you're doing. No, but really, and it's wonderful, because it's all, going back to what you're talking about with your book, it all comes from you. You can tell it's all authentic. It's all done with passion. And I just think there's, but sometimes it's actually in the nicest way quite hard to avoid you. I've got a sweaty Betty very near me, so I see you pretty much daily. As I opened my door home on Friday, there was a sweaty Betty catalogue on the floor, and there you are doing some amazing yoga pose. So we're not just talking about the work thing, you also are very bendy. You can draw. Like, if I could draw, I would be telling everybody. My drawing sort of stopped at about 12, I think.
Oh, I love it.
Everybody's straight on.
But you know what, that's only been a part of my life that I'm allowing back in now. Like, I used to draw and paint before I had kids all the time. I'd always have an easel up and be doing a painting at night, or
because
like,
did you do A-level?
An A-level, and then I kind of left towards the end of that because I was already working, so I was trying to juggle a lot then. But because of the kids, I just felt I can't justify sitting here doing a lovely painting if they're with my cousin or whatever. So I just let it go for years, and only a month ago, I did my first portrait in about, I don't know, it must be 6 or 7 years because Honey's doing more nursery hours and Rex is at school. So I just painted all day and I was like, oh my God, I love this. I'd forgotten how much I love it. And again, it's that loophole thing of I'm creating something wonderful and I feel productive, but I'm just getting so much from it.
Yeah.
But I'm only really like giving myself permission to do that now, which seems ludicrous because again, like Jesse will go off and watch Chelsea for 4 or 5 hours on a Saturday or whatever.
Yeah.
And he loves it and it's absolutely fine. And again, I'm not saying that in a judgmental way, but I do think women give themselves much more of a hard time about giving themselves pleasure without any caveat. Just
I am so
pleasure.
In agreement. Yeah, I'm nodding a lot over here because I think, funny if I think it's, I don't know, maybe this is just for you and I, but I feel like I'm now 40 and I feel like I'm still teaching myself that about the permission to do something just for its own sake.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to do that. And actually, when I do present things to the family in the way that says I'm doing that, like I just went away for half term with my mum and my teenage son, and ordinarily I'd be tying myself in knots being away from the younger ones. And this time I was just like, this it needs to happen, actually. Yeah. It's really important.
Yeah.
And when you present something like that, then nobody flaps anyway. The kids are fine because I'm saying to them, this is just happening. Whereas I think I've fallen foul so many times of, because I love what I do and because I'm my own boss with it and I can decide when I work, I've sort of let them think that actually I can also choose to completely clear the decks and that I think I should have set it out a lot more sort of as a professional thing from the get-go, because instead they just think, well, just tell them you can't sing or we don't need, don't go and write a song today.
Yeah, yeah, I know, let them think that's a thing. I know, it's just so complex for us to work out what we are deserving of. You know, not only probably due to where we grew up, how we grew up, how we were parented, but also just historically how women have been presented and how women have lived. And also, you know, we think back to all the sacrifices our grandmothers, great-grandmothers would have made. And there is a bit of that that still sort of stings, like, oh my God, you know, I do have so many more options and choices. And I think we're still shedding a few of those layers. Like, you know, my neither of my nans worked. They had no choice. They were at home, and that was, they brought up my parents and my aunties and uncles, and that was how it was. So it's, I think there's so much sort of historic baggage that we're carrying, as well as our own personal stuff and stuff from our parents, that it's never just as simple as, I think I deserve this, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I agree. It's always got these caveats. No, you're completely right, because initially when I thought, oh, I'd love to, you know, to do this podcast and talk to working mothers, I was like, well, is it a thing? Maybe it's just a thing because I think it's... And then I see so much everywhere. I'm like, no, it's very much still an issue.
I think many people just pretend everything's easy and fine. Like, I've certainly in the last sort of 5 years, I'm just honest now. I am just me. Before that, I didn't feel I could be. I was kind of just this person on TV and no one wanted to know what was going on in my life. No, you know, I was in that, again, that Radio One world predominantly, where it was about fun and, you know, just the music and the excitement. And you don't sit there and talk about how you're really feeling or what's going on. But I've seen such worth in it that now in any area of my life, but especially parenting, you know, I will post on Instagram that I haven't slept or that, you know, there's the cat's done a shit on the floor and I'm having to do sort that out. And then I'm late for the school run. And I've, last week I sent Honey to school in her World Book Day costume the day early. That was a good one.
what was it? It
wasn't, well, just luckily she hates dressing up. So it was literally a cat onesie with cat ears. So she got away with it. Oh. It could have been a lot worse if I'd sent her in like some handmade outfit. But I don't want to present it as just like, oh yeah, I'm a working mum and it's all so easy.
Yeah.
No, I find it bloody hard all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm luckier than most that I really love my job.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same.
And it's still tricky. So, you know, for single parents out there, for parents that hate their jobs, whatever, it's just a minefield. It's a big, big topic for so many
people. It is. But in a nicer way, how do you think being a mum has influenced your creativity? Because obviously it's a massive part of your world.
Hugely. I mean, especially with the writing. Massively, because before I was very tunnel visioned with how I saw life, and I had this very weird life that became very normal to me. So from sort of 15 to 29, I was just hugely selfish in how I ran my life, and I would be traveling all over the place and doing all these exciting things here or in America or whatever I was doing. And it just was about, supposedly in my head at the time, scaling this like ascent to success utopia, whatever that means or was.
But
I thought that was a thing and it was going to make me feel more complete and better or whatever. And I don't know if it was through getting older or through having kids or a bit of everything going on and how my life changed, but I mean, I just see life in just a completely different way.
Yeah.
And success has been completely redefined. It's not an ascent to anywhere. It's just a daily experience of what's going on.
Yeah.
And learning to go with the ups and downs rather than it being this sort of end goal. And it's allowed me to write in a much more, well, it's allowed me to write full stop, but in a much more thoughtful and open-minded way. And I think, you know, with everything really, like, you know, even silly little things, like with this charity initiative that we've come up with for the Prince's Trust, it's all about being creative. And obviously that's been hugely important my whole life. But since having kids, it's now one of the main ways that we as a family, well, certainly me and the two little ones, will connect. You know, we will sit and, like, there's always stuff on our table in the conservatory, just like bits of junk and stuff that we're making or painting. And it's something that we always just go back to, and they seem to really thrive when we're doing it. And the same with my stepdaughter, more than my stepson. We have always baked together since she was 5 years old. We've always, you know, done little cakes together or had little baking projects. And she's 14 now, so she's kind of moving out of that being a bit uncool. But, you know, it's all, that's always, that's kind of been ramped up because of the kids as well. I probably would have let that slide massively if they hadn't been there to encourage that sort of need for creativity.
Yeah. No, I think it's such an intrinsic part of, it's back again to authenticity, but also it's, being creative is so good for small people because of their morale. It's not really about what you're producing, but just kind of keeping your brain like firing off in all those different directions.
And getting them off screens. So anything to get them away from a screen is good. And it's hard.
That's quite a big issue in our house, I think, because Richard and I are quite geeky, but also a lot of our work is on the computer or on phones. And so, you know, they've all become aware of these gadgets from when they're little, and
it's hard.
Especially the older two, the 11-year-old and the 15-year-old, are really into computing and gaming, but also creating stuff on there sometimes. But it's quite hard to sort of navigate that.
It is, but I just think we have to sort of look at it and see that their world is so different to how ours was when we were growing up, and we've got to integrate, you know, how we grew up with the modern world and find some kind of middle ground. And like, I saw, didn't Sonny build his own computer?
He did, yeah.
When that's insane. What a skill.
Well, it is a skill. Yeah, that was when he was 12. And it's brilliant. But now it means he's got a computer in his bedroom. So he's had that for a little while. And sometimes I think it's been good for him because he does some really positive stuff on there. And sometimes I think, is that a really daft thing? But I suppose I'll slightly have to wait and see it a little bit, really.
Yeah, we all are. We're the generation, like, discovering what the repercussions of these screens, you know, what that manifests as. None of us know right now. It's terrifying.
And one thing I've always thought was really strange for our kids is the fact that they know so much what they look like. Because when I was little, I didn't really know what I looked like half the time.
No.
And if I was dressed up somehow, you know, I'd see the picture maybe like 2 weeks later when it had been developed. The idea that you take the picture or show them the screen and they know, how weird is that?
That's the bit that terrifies me most definitely, especially having daughters.
Mm.
Oh my God, I find that, like, Lola's 14, so she's in the thick of this kind of Snapchat, Instagram, which is not as big on Instagram, but like definitely the Snapchat vortex, where it's just every 4 seconds they take a picture of themselves. And it's not necessarily pose, it's just like because they're messaging their friends and that's how they communicate with each other. But like you say, it's a sort of subconscious undercurrent of a mirror constantly back at you. And I don't know, that it freaks me out a lot, but we can't change, it's there, it's in our everyday society, you know, we can't combat it single-handedly. It's such a tricky one.
I think one of the best things you can do, not just with screens, but with sort of everything that goes on as they grow up, is just try and sort of walk alongside them with things. I think as long as they're communicating and talking to you about, you know, things they're excited about, things they're scared of, or, you know, what worries them, then actually that's the best you can do with all of it, really.
Because I think as soon as you say you're not allowed or you can't do this, then all of a sudden it becomes this like tempting.
Definitely.
What is it? Oh my God, you know, I really need that now because I'm really not allowed it. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's a tricky one.
Yeah, I know. But in a nicer way, if I asked your kids what you do for a living, do you think they'd be able to answer me?
Rex would probably just say, he'd probably just say I'm on the telly and radio, because that's the only bits that he can kind of grasp. Like,
that's
a podcast, he's got no idea. I don't think Honey, I don't know, I've never asked her. I don't think she would really know. Rex is weirdly just understanding the concept of fame at the moment. Honey has no clue.
No,
but Rex is starting to get it, because like, say we're out and about and someone asks for a picture, he'll go, is that because you're on the TV? And I'll sort of have to talk to him and explain about it. And also, obviously, he knows that his granddad's very famous. So he has a concept of that. And if we're out with his granddad or he sees him on the TV, or like we watched him on the Brits just recently and he thought that was hilarious.
That's so such he's a surreal idea.
I know. So he's
just granddad on the Brits.
He's getting to grips with like what that means. And I'm very honest because I'm quite opinionated about what fame is and what it means. And I hate the fact that it's seen as this like wonderful thing that is attainable or that will change your life for the better, because to me it's neutral, it has no effect on my life at all.
Yeah.
The success does. That has all sorts of good points and bad points. But the fame has just neutrality. Like, I can't see any impact that it has on my life in any way apart from someone might go, Fern, in the street, and then duck. Like, that is literally it.
Yeah.
So I'm always very vocal about, you know, yeah, it's just because I just make it very normal and it's just not a big, big deal. Because I don't want them growing up with some sort of warped image of that meaning something. Because I do see it as very meaningless.
I feel exactly the same way. And I think from when I first heard people recognise me, I realised that they'd recognise someone who's in an advert on telly a lot. It's sort of without any context. It's
completely.
And for them as well, it's a tiny part of their day. Like, if you're going about your business, and like, they might remember to mention it to someone later in the day, or they might completely forget.
Oh my God, mine would not even, it would be like the most boring, anything to do with me is just boring, or Jesse, just boring, move on. And the same with my stepkids, they're just absolutely unfazed by any of it. It's just whatever, do you know what I mean? They're much more interested in their world and their lives and their friends and what's going on there than anything that could be going on in our world. So, yeah, and I think you can make fame and all that side of the weird side of our career a big deal if you want. Mm. You can, you know, have blacked out windows and wear a cap out in public and all that shit. Or you can just go to the supermarket and do your normal thing and crack on with life as normal, which we do, because it has no impact on us. So I think you can make it a big deal, or you can choose to just whatever.
I completely agree. And I think as well, when people first start to get successful in that way, I think which option you choose is also the thing that is probably a part of helping you feel good about your job as well. Because I think for some people, getting all those trappings, the sunglasses and the hat and all that, makes them feel like it's harder to dismantle it and take it away.
Yeah, Jesse is that. Because he just got back from
the supermarket.
He's
got sunglasses on, actually. I think he thinks,
oh,
you know,
he's such
a twat. Richard wears sunglasses all the time. Like, I mean, it's a nice enough day, but
I don't even know where mine are. Mine don't come out till like June. I don't know where they are in the house. Somewhere in a drawer. Hi. You're trying to be really quiet, but you're being very loud.
Oh, well,
so, thanks for going to the supermarket. Well done. It's okay.
Well, we can nearly finish up, actually. The only other thing I wanted to ask you is if there's ever been a time where your family life, home stuff and work has sort of collided in a way that's maybe not been ideal or been a bit funny or silly. Because I know I've had billions of times when that's happened for me. Like, probably the most sort of excruciating was when Sonny, that's my eldest, when he was about two, and I'd gone to do, Richard and Judy used to have a live show they were doing in the evenings. It was after they'd done This Morning, I think.
I remember that. Yeah.
So it's maybe like, I think it's when the Richard and Judy book club started. Like,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
So it was a live show, and I had a really bad cold, and my mum had really bad advice. She's not a good advice. This was terrible advice. She told me to take Sudafed for my cold so I wasn't snivelly. And I don't know if you've ever taken that stuff,
no.
But it was awful. My pupils went to pinpricks. My heart was racing.
Oh my God.
I felt terrible. Like, I mean, I was someone that used to get quite bad anxiety on live telly anyway. I mean, this was just,
I do still.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm the same. It's like my least favourite medium,
same.
Actually.
Yeah.
So I was sort of sat there on the sofa trying to feel relaxed and feeling really parched. And and Richard Mady went, actually, your son's here. Can we bring him over? And I was thinking, no, because don't really do anything with them in public at all. And I was thinking, oh God, when I get home, Rich is going to kill me and the grandparents are going to kill me. And Sonny came trotting over and they'd put a radio mic on him. And he was only two and he had this, it was sort of went down halfway down his thigh, this really big radio pack.
Oh God.
And he just started to dismantle the set. They had a pretend fireplace and Sonny was picking up these sticks from the fireplace.
Oh,
and Richard Mady said something like, what was it? No, I'm trying to remember. Sticks and stones won't break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Oh God,
and
almighty.
I was thinking, that's round the wrong way. And I'd really like him to put the sticks down now.
Oh, Sophie, this is so ridiculous. I can feel like the anxiety around that situation is a big one.
I don't know what the moral
is. You know what
is.
I have? There isn't one.
No.
It's just one of those clusterfuck things that happen. I mean, oh my God. Yeah, I mean, there definitely have been moments where I have found that the worlds don't collide well. So when I had Honey, I went back to work straight away. So with Rex, I had that break. With Honey, I literally was back after 3 weeks. I recorded the Jamie Oliver's show down the end of the pier, the Friday night dinners thing. And
3 weeks.
So she came with me and he just said, look, anytime you want to go breastfeed, just go and do it, it's fine. Mm. So I was juggling it. And that one flukily, but I think because she was so tiny and she was an exceptionally good baby, I kind of made it work. But then there were times where, like, I remember recording the BBC Music Awards and it was in Birmingham. I'd taken Honey up for the night and we were in this hotel room and it was a brand new hotel. And I was breastfeeding and I thought, right, I'm going to set the schedule so that everything works through the night and I'm not too tired for this huge live show the next day. Mm. And this new hotel, loads of stuff was going wrong and the lights in my bedroom wouldn't turn off.
Oh.
So I was like, what the hell am I going to do? She's snoozing now. I need to sleep. It was like 11 o'clock at night. We had an early wake the next day. So then at like midnight, I'm moving all of her baby stuff, all of my stuff into a room next door. So I barely slept, trying to then breastfeed before I go to this big live concert. You know, you've got like all these pop stars walking around. It's like all just completely bizarre. Mm. At nearing the end of the show, my boobs are like rocks, like absolute boulders of milk. I'm thinking, if we don't finish this, it's just gonna start coming out. Like there is no stopping this situation. Yeah. And sort of feeling a bit panicky about that, but trying to stay focused. And, you know, there have been a lot of times where it's just felt like this cannot work together. This is not like I can just pop off, like, I'm so sorry, Chris Evans, I'm just gonna walk off the stage and because my tits are literally about to explode. So yeah, there have certainly been moments where I've just thought, what am I doing? This is, and trying to get her to nap when I'm like in between things, like in a buggy racing around a block of the studio, you know, trying to get the kids asleep and panicking, and then she doesn't, and then going on set feeling really frantic. And oh my God, like those days I've sort of parked it and forgotten it. But if I think about it too much, oh my God, I don't know how I got through that anxiety because it was just, the juggling was ridiculous.
It is. And you find yourself telling people that you don't need to tell and they don't even understand what you're talking about anyway.
And I thought, oh God, I'm really lucky I get to take my kids to work. I've got a sort of job where it's actually doable because like my mum came to Top of the Pops at Christmas that year because she could sit with Honey whilst I was on set. But I thought I was making it all work, but it was utter chaos.
Yeah.
Like, leaking boobs, babies crying, pop stars trying to warm up next door, running around blocks trying to get babies to sleep. Like, not as relaxing as I'd envisaged whatsoever.
No,
but
no.
Luckily, I don't know if I've had too much crossover where I've felt like they've had to be part of... Like, I've been asked, you know, would you do a TV show where we shoot the kids or whatever? And I'm like, absolutely not. I just don't want them... I want them to make the decision down the line. And I've been asked if I would talk in depth about step-parenting, and I haven't quite found my comfort level with that subject even yet because it feels so personal. You know, I do talk about it, but, you know, I'm not going to talk on behalf of my stepkids.
Yeah, maybe when
individuals,
they're older.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so I'm still finding my feet with it and working out how much to do and show. And it's just, again, because it's a new thing for all of us to kind of get used to, like, do we put our kids on Instagram? Do we not? Do we talk about them? Do we not? You know, it's, and there's, again, no wrong or right. It's just what feels right for you at the moment.
No, that's a very bespoke thing. It's very,
I think so.
Each to their own, because for some people, what I've already revealed about my kids is way too much. And for some people, they're happy to do way more.
Exactly.
I think.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not judgmental about what other people do.
No, just, nor me. Nor me. You've just got to find what's your barometer, what feels good, what it pushes you over the edge, and don't be swayed by other people. I think you've got to do what feels right for you.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, actually, I know what I want to ask you. I mean, I'm not at all interested in, like, literally how many nannies and childcare and all that, but are you someone that's... have you always found it okay handing your kids over when you have to go and work?
No. I mean, at first, it was really lovely that my cousin worked for us because she's like my sister. We grew up very, very close with our families, living near each other, going on holiday every year together. So she is like one of my favourite humans on earth. So it was so... I remember asking her, we were with my nan, who's no longer with us, but we were sat with my nan and I was like, do you want to come and help out with Rex when I go back to work? Just, it was a spare of the moment thought. And she was like, yes, I hate where I'm working, please. And it just all worked and was just so beautiful. So we were really lucky in that respect. I'm still very lucky now. We've got a part-time nanny who does after-school bits if I'm not around. I don't use her just for if I want to go and like... chill out, but if I'm working or if Jessie's away, we have a wonderful lady who helps us out, and she is amazing. But it doesn't mitigate the guilt that I still feel when I go to work that someone else is with my kids. She's integral to our family, otherwise Jessie and I couldn't do what we do, and that is a choice that we've made. But I still do find it really tricky.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I rarely work weekends, and I have quite a lot of time in the week, so I I kind of balance it out by going, well, I've just had like this, it's Monday today, Sunday and Saturday, we had so much lovely family time and went to Kew Gardens and went out with some family, other family, some cousins, and we just had like really special time. So today when I'm working, and then the lovely lady who helps us out is going to take Honey for a play date after nursery today because I've got some work to do. And, you know, I can kind of find my own balance within it, but I still find it, yeah, tricky for sure. I know I'm really fortunate and lucky that I get that opportunity, but I still do find it mentally quite challenging.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. I think it's always going to have that little bit of that balance, because it's important to get done the things you need to get done, but you always think, like, if you say, oh, can you just take me out to the park, it'd be lovely, and then you're thinking, oh, actually I'd quite
why
like
am I not there
the
I know I yeah. know it's a we're in a fortunate situation that we have that access, but it does still mentally create a bit of torment, I think.
Well, talking of mental torment, I don't know if you knew this. I only really found out yesterday about what happens in the neurology when you have a baby. You probably know about this.
No, I do not.
There's three areas of your brain that sort of get enlarged and by having a baby. It's social interaction, it's empathy, and it's anxiety. And I didn't actually... I feel like I wasn't really spoken to about any of those things in any of my pregnancies.
What, really. I mean, what are we told? So little. Like, you're just literally figuring it out and seeing, especially on the mental side of things. I think physically we're given some guidance, but still not enough. Mentally, none.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes say, are you okay with this? And then they'll tick a box and then that's sort of fine.
Yeah, I know. And the transition from being like just a regular person walking about doing their own thing to being responsible for another human life is probably one of the like biggest transitions that you will take on.
Yeah, it's got
And you're just
to
meant
be.
To sort of mentally figure it out, and then figure it out with possibly also a co-parent if you have one. So you're both with your different brains who've had very different physical experiences trying to figure it out. Like, it's just, the whole thing is bonkers.
Yeah, and actually when I read that, I thought, well, that makes a lot of sense of things I was experiencing, but nobody really told me that at the time. And I'm apparently, you know, it's the first time probably that you've spent most of your time thinking about things you can't control.
Yes.
Which makes so much sense, doesn't it? That's exactly what it feels like.
We're a control freak. That's impossible.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. No, I know. And I look back, I thought, it would have been quite a useful thing if someone had said
so,
I think.
I think, like, the empathy thing is actually a lovely positive, because you put yourself right at the bottom of the pile, so you are always thinking about other people. It can tip into dangerous territory, but it is kind of a nice thing. But I think the anxiety... I think, again, because of social media and how parenting is often presented, that it can be this kind of beautiful scene of running across a beach with your perfectly dressed children and everything's amazing, and you don't see the fucking awful car journey on the way there.
Exactly.
And the tantrums and the fighting or the lack of sleep or whatever, that we do put ourselves under extra pressure.
Yeah.
And when we do feel anxiety, we think that then we're faulty or we're not coping.
Yeah.
Whereas... show me a parent that's not completely anxious most of the time. Like, I don't know any. Me and my friends talk constantly, and everyone's always worried about something or feeling lacking in an area or are worried about something to do with their kids. It's not possible to not have that anxiety.
No, and you need a bit of it, because you're trying to to keep someone who starts off with zero common sense to, like, get them to adulthood.
Yeah, exactly.
It needs to be there, but obviously as well, that all those levels are different in each individual, which is why some people can tip into things that just can be unhealthy. But I just really wish I'd been told that, actually.
Yeah, it's really important. We should pass that on to all pregnant humans.
Yeah, because the sort of point of wanting to have these chats, aside from hearing how people do it and how nice that is for me, is I do think there's so many positives to having kids in terms of how it helps you grow. And I think actually it's, for me, made me more ambitious and made me focus better.
Mm.
But actually, obviously, there are so many people that choose not to have kids or can't have children for whatever reason. And it might be dangled there as if, like, motherhood is this way to access this thing. Someone described it as motherhood as finding a room in your head that was always there, but you'd never gone in there before, and suddenly you sort of have that extra space. And I thought, well, that's nice, but there's a lot of people that, you know, for whatever reason, might never open that room. And actually, I think, you know, you can, you know, I think it's more the flip is that you're normally very worried that motherhood is somehow going to curtail a lot of yourself. And I know before I had Sunny, I was thinking, I do want to work, but what if it all goes away? What if I can't think of another song again? Or I just feel a bit daft standing on stage, or that's part of me is just sort of somehow gone or homogenised, and I just can't get back to it again.
I think, again, like you're so right. Parenting can, especially sort of motherhood, can be presented as this you know, thing that's going to equate completion to, you know, this is now you as the completed version of your female self. And it's just, it's so not that, because I think with like everything in life, you gain a lot of stuff, but you also have to lose stuff because there's got to be room made to become a parent and to have these new things that are going on in your life and new thoughts. And then bits of me have closed off and maybe they'll open up in the future, but there's no room for them right now.
Yeah.
You know, and that one of them is sort of like having a social life or having the energy to do stuff that I used to do is just not there. And I think, you know, because I've had friends that have had a lot of difficulty getting pregnant and watched the, you know, horrendous pain and loneliness that they feel in that space because they don't feel they've got anyone to talk to about it. And I felt like that for a while. You know, I very luckily got pregnant when I was 30, but before that I was desperate to be a mum. Like it felt, it's all I could think about. I was completely obsessed with the idea. I probably did buy into a bit of that. Oh my God, then I'm going to be this complete human. And a lot of my friends either had kids or were having them. And it took me a little while to get pregnant and I had to be a bit patient there. But there are quite a few situations where people say things they don't realise they're being presumptuous or they're putting you in a box because you haven't got kids. And I was desperate to, like absolutely desperate to. And I did feel quite a lot of hurt during that sort of time. So, yeah, I do just think how parenting is presented, especially on social media, is just a very, you know, it's this perfect ideal that apparently is going to look and feel amazing. And I definitely bought into that beforehand. And it's just, that's not the reality. It's just so much more complex and impossible at times. And, you know, I've spoken to some of my friends who had a lot of trouble getting pregnant, who have now got kids. And I say, you know, do you feel any different, or do you feel that completion? And they're like, well, obviously I'm like insanely grateful to have a kid, but no, it's not how I thought it was going to be, you know, mentally.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is because of the presentation of motherhood and the ideals around it that aren't realistic whatsoever.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree with all of that, actually. It's true. And I don't, well, at this point, I can't actually really remember what I thought motherhood would be like. It feels like so long ago before I had kids, but I do know that it came with so many unexpected things. And I remember the guilt thing was probably the most stark one. I just was
same.
Like, what? I just feel guilty like most of the time.
Yeah.
And the second one is a nicer one, but being patient, actually. I used to be quite a lot more impatient. And I
thought, same.
Oh, and problem solving. I've got so much better at problem solving because, especially with five kids and all different ages, I've had to deal with all manner of things when we're out and about or when we're just about to leave or something happening. And I now quite enjoy that. And I can apply that to my work a little bit. I quite like that, the problem solving. Like, there's always a way. There's something we can do.
Patience is a big one. Like, I had zero patience, like none. I would just give up and go, well, I'm not doing that because it's taking too long. I can't be bothered or whatever. Whereas, especially with Rex, I've learned I have to be patient with him. I cannot rush this kid. I cannot spring things on him and expect him to be dynamic. I've got to be patient and prepared. And there are certain things I have to do to get him to listen and to play ball so that our family can operate in a cohesive way. Because he's a very, he's quite sort of sensitive, but he's just a very vibrant person. So everything is like very extreme and he's just very expressive, and I have to really honour it and work with it and be patient with how he is as a human. I can't control or manipulate what his personality is like. I've got to work with it. So patience for me has been a huge one, one. Still learning that one.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how much more responsive it is actually raising a small person, because you think it's all about the sort of parent you're going to be and who they're going to be, but actually you get this person and then you just have to sort of react to that and go, okay, well, you seem to work better with this, that and the other, and actually my ideas for how this is going to go today is I'll park
it's
that.
So not about you. That's what I thought it's going to be how am I going to be as a parent, how am I going to raise my children and what the ethos I'm going to like set in the house. And it's like, no, I've got to work with what you guys are like. I've got to work with these two totally different personalities. The other thing I hadn't prepared for, two kids who have entirely different outlooks on life from the get-go, and make them get on. And all of us do things together. And like you, we've got kids ranging from 4 to 18. So how is that going to work? You know, it is about learning to have all these personalities aligning somehow and making it work. So, yeah, you are like, your opinion can do one. It's like very much about, you know, for the good of the kids and their upbringing, making sure that, yeah, you know, you've got to have your say and make sure things work for you, but really you've got to be listening and like take on board all these different wants and needs and personalities and figure a way out to make it work.
Definitely. No, I completely agree. I'm going to be learning that for the rest of my life.
I know we are. There's no end with this one. No, just carry on.
There is not. Well, I could actually keep talking to you all day, but
me too.
I'm aware that you have lots of things to be getting on with. And thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our chat. It's been really insightful. And I'm glad to hear that there's a little bit of chaos going on in amongst such prolific...
A lot.
Yeah, but I still can't work out if I'm more impressed with all the things you've got going on or how flipping tidy your house is. Like, yeah, my home has never, ever, ever looked like this.
Yeah, but this is also
because...
Can you
come around and tidy my house?
I'm a control
when you're not writing
freak
a book
with
or...
this too. So this is why I have no... People are like, you know, oh, you must just be a workaholic if you have no social life. No, I'm also spending a lot of my time arranging bookshelves and making things look neat because otherwise I just am unbearable to be around.
Well, it's gorgeous.
Thank you so much.
Come and stay around at mine. Be very stressed out. Oh, I've got the same wallpaper as you.
I love that wallpaper.
I've got it in my kitchen. Yeah, be a bit stressed out by the mess and then tidy it all for me.
I would like to do that. You know, I go around certain people's houses. I actually went around to someone's house recently. It was a friend of ours was house sitting for someone else and the people had gone on holiday. It was so, so messy. I just said, look, guys, I know we're meant to be like, we're having a barbecue, whatever, but I'm just going to clean their kitchen. And I did their whole kitchen. I like rearranged. I mean, they might have not wanted me to do it at all, but I had the best afternoon.
Wow.
I was cleaning like dead flies off windowsills. Like it was pretty extreme. Was cleaning surfaces that were just like, unreal, arranging all of their cleaning products. Like, wow. It was a great afternoon for me.
Well, I don't know what you're doing this weekend, but I'm thinking of having a barbecue. Oh, no, seriously, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sophie.
So, that was my lovely chat with Fern about how she's managing life, normal life, the old normal, working alongside raising her young family. And now we find ourselves in a new normal. And it's funny reflecting back because, in a way, hearing Fern and I chat about how we fit, you know, some of our work around kids being in school and things like that, it feels, well, quite frankly, it feels very indulgent. I have not found myself with the luxury of time and headspace that I had before. But... where there's a will, there's a way. And I've spoken to Fern since we had our chat on that day. And I know that she's getting on with lots and lots of bits and bobs. And I did ask her if there was anything in particular that she had coming up that she wanted me to mention. And she had loads of projects, but actually very sweetly, the only thing she thought it'd be nice to chat about was Happy Place, which I thought was very apt because I think if you're lucky enough, then you reach a point in your life where your main bit of work is actually so close to your passion, and Happy Place is so clearly a project close to Fern's heart, whether it be the podcast, which are hugely successful, or her festival. So I would say watch this space. I think everybody's going to need more and more of a happy place to go to after all the heaviness of what's been going on. I wish her and her family very well. And thank you for listening to Spinning Plates. And I'll see you again soon. Lots of love.